thinking about this idea of Christ being formed in us, that God has this sort of purpose, that we aren't just stagnant, but that we are an unfinished product. And the kind of transformation that God is doing is as significant as the movement from a caterpillar to a butterfly. Outwardly, in many ways, we are wasting away, our physical bodies are aging, our minds are deteriorating. But inwardly, there's this renewal, this transformation that is establishing us for eternity. Now, today we're going to be thinking about the place that community has in that formation. And it's really a question not of if community will form us, but which community is going to form us. All of us are formed by the people around us. Often we don't see it happening until we sort of stand back, or particularly we can notice it in the lives of others. If you can sort of stop and listen to the way that you speak, the kind of terms that you use, and no doubt the people that you're spending a lot of time with will be shaping that. Josiah's probably bumping out some Greek translations, whereas some of the younger guys are using words that I don't even know if that a positive thing or a negative thing. I need to sort of type it in to work out what's going on. The people around us, they shape us. And it's not just our speech, it can be the decisions that we start to mirror, the way that others make decisions, our appearance, the style that we want to imitate, and the priorities that we tend to adopt in our life. John Mark Comer, who we've been spending a little bit of time with during this series, says that we become like the people we're with. Can you think of a situation, perhaps now or in the past, where your cohort have really influenced you? I know for me, coming out of COVID, just been spending a lot of time with the school dads riding bikes together because, you know, exercise outdoors was sort of one of the easy communal things to be doing. But as I sort of stopped and looked, I realized that I was starting to take their outlook on life. It wasn't drastic, but I started just absorbing this more pessimistic view of marriage, a sort of more conflicted view of parenting than how I'd really want to approach it. And certainly, I think, a different posture towards money and possessions. I don't know, I've said it to a few of you, but during that time, I sort of felt like an undercover cop who had sort of gone to reach these people and then sort of felt conflicted. Have they influenced me more than I'm influencing them? We become like the people we are with. Community always disciples. And so if your identity isn't clear, then the community that you connect with, they're going to forge an identity for you. And that identity could be healthy, or maybe it's not. Maybe for you, you think about a workplace that you're with and it changed you. Your family of origin, certainly for all of us, shapes us in significant ways, positive and negative. And then there's sort of the wider subculture, the air that we breathe. Well, here today, we want to consider how Jesus might form us. What is it that he's offering? And Colossians 3 is our passage. And we read, "Since then you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things, for you died and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, that we just sung about, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory." You see, if you don't have an identity as you enter a community, that community is going to give you an identity that you're going to take on. And our identity is sort of how we see ourselves. It's what it is that we value. And often the things that we value draw us towards like-minded people. So the things that we are convicted of being good and true, they drive our decisions, and then formation happens. You know, where we set our hearts, where we give our minds to, where we find rest and assurance, where it is that we find life-giving energy and outlook, that is going to drastically shape us. So it's not a matter of if community will shape us, but which community. And as we think about community today, I think there's probably two experiences that we all wrestle with. Firstly, the idea of having a community that we desire. Those times where we feel disconnected or perhaps in transition. Perhaps you see other people and they have a group of people that they're doing life with and we sort of feel out of kilt. That season where you desperately want to find your people, where you just want to be around some people who make life easy, where things flow, where there are connections and interactions, where you can have some fun. It's not just hard work. You see, many people are desiring community. Perhaps there's fractures in our life that mean that we move location or something changes that means that we are displaced. And we can become deeply jealous of those who have realized community. An experience of life when you feel connected, known, and supported, where you both know others and are known by them. Where you have people who are willing to show up when you're in need. But just having a realized community isn't necessarily enough. Underworld gangs, drug cartels, they're pretty good at forming a community, often for people who are displaced, to give them a sense of belonging and purpose. And so if you are in a realized community today, you've got your people. The question you've got to reflect on is it a healthy community? You see, I had to have a moment of reflection where this group of men who I was spending time with were having not the most positive impact on me. It wasn't helping reinforce my identity as a follower of Jesus. I had to reconfigure how I approached my interactions with them and the time that I was giving to them. And so if, similar to me, your realized community, the people who know you, the people that you're comfortable with, the people who you're drawn towards, if they're not pointing in the right direction, we need to be very careful. But perhaps for you, your realized community is Jesus focus, the Christian group at your university campus, a Bible study that you're in, or even this church community here. That's great. But the Christian community is never just complete. God is constantly open to new people, for those who are desiring community and want to find that around Jesus. And so the church is a community that always needs to be working hard to try and make that a reality, that the church community is a genuine community that people feel is realized for them as they seek to follow Jesus. We see sort of how this might play out in our passage where Paul says, here there is no Gentile or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ is all and is in all. You see, this is the tension that the Christian community needs to always work out. And now, what does it mean for Christ being all? Well, I think surely it means that he needs to be our major identifier. We need to identify as a follower of Jesus more than our cultural background, more than perhaps our gifts that we use, more than even our personality or friendships. The church is to be a community built around him, not for our preferences. And Jesus is the great leveler. Because whether you're at the lowest of the low as a slave, or whether you're at the very height of social status as a free person, whether you're so opposed as a barbarian or a Scythian, Jesus is this reference point that levels all those other identifiers and becomes this gravitational pull to hold his people together. Christ is all, and Christ is in all. See, the Christian community has God present through the Holy Spirit dwelling in each believer. And so how we treat one another is ultimately how we treat Christ. And so community interactions aren't optional, but an actual expression of this new humanity that Christ is doing in each of us individually, but also the collective that he is establishing for eternity. And so you might think that your church experience is a perfect community to be realized, and there are moments where you can be thankful, but we always need to be ready for change, that God might have other purposes to grow and mature us as his people more into the likeness of his son, and that might not always be comfortable. But the reality is he's at work in all and through all. So our church experience is always going to be dynamic. It's never just always going to be the same. Paul sort of says that this is in contradiction to the way of this world, because actually the age of self is quite anti-community. As he goes through this sort of vice list, we sort of see how self-focused they are. He says, put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature: sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived, but now you must also rid yourselves of all such things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. Do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self, self with its practices, and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. You see this list of vices, how they're just so inward focused. Sexual immorality and impurity is the self-demanding personal gratification. Greed is the self insisting that it needs more. Anger, rage, malice, and slander, they are the self wanting to defend themselves against people who and wanting to strike back when they feel threatened. Deceit is the self wanting to manipulate others so that they can gain their own advantage. All of these vices fracture community because they place the self at the center. It's characteristic of people using others for their own gain. And so a community that's shaped by the age of self cannot be a community that is shaped by Jesus. Because if Christ is all, then the self cannot be at the center. So to be a part of this community formed around Jesus is this rhythm of putting off a self-centered life, removing ourselves from the center, because that ultimately is going to destroy the community that God is forming. And so the age of self encourages us to live by our truth, but the result is that it produces pretty thin connections, fragile relationships, and as we see in our society, a life of isolation. See, the age of self is not drawing stronger relationships, but it's drawing disconnection. Dallas Willard says, isolation is the single greatest enemy of spiritual growth. We are formed in connection and deformed in disconnection. So I'm posing that the age of self is like the life of a tiger. Who knows what a group of tigers is called? That's it. a streak. Like in poker, a streak's pretty rare. It's rare to see tigers together. They are loners. They come together to satisfy their desires, to procreate, to keep their species going, but pretty much everything else is all about them. Friends, we live in a world that is anti-community. A community where individuals place themselves at the center will never last. Because you might have experienced that quickly, we have differences that we can't overcome. Think about the schoolyard. Maybe you've been kicked out, or maybe you've kicked someone out of your friendship group. As a parent in a school community, perhaps you've been silenced. You've been removed from the chat groups, not invited to the social events. Perhaps in your family, as you head towards Christmas, you know the people who are not invited, who are clearly not welcome. Only Christ can build a community that lasts because he is shaping his people into his likeness. He is the common gravitational center, and he's so countercultural that it actually has a hope of lasting. You see, if we think about how Jesus lived, he lived in the complete opposite to our self-absorbed world. He was otherly centered in every degree. He moves towards those who are hurting rather than thinking, oh, they're just too difficult. He noticed those who everyone else overlooked because they had nothing to give. He served those who were undeserving. He forgave those who were guilty. He gave himself to the very people who rejected him. Jesus' life is countercultural to the way that we see and the force that we're encouraged to follow. His life was about self-giving, love poured out. And so a community with him as the center should start to look a little bit more like him and a little bit less like the world. People who listen before they speak. People who serve without need of recognition. People whose tendency is to want to forgive rather than retaliate. To share rather than hold. To honour others rather than tear them down. You see, the great vision that God is establishing for us is a community that is slowly being formed into the likeness of his Son. A community that is not about us, but about him and about others. And so to be formed in the way of Jesus requires that we have one another. The list of virtues, therefore, are so relational. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Friends, we were created for one another to be in relationship, to love and to be loved. Compassion requires someone else in your life who is hurting. Kindness requires that you know someone who needs generosity. Humility requires that you engage with someone who is gifted differently to you. Gentleness requires that there's someone in your orbit who is fragile. Patience requires another person who does things differently or slower or quicker than you want to. To bear with someone, you need someone who frustrates you. To forgive, you need someone who has hurt you. To love just requires you to be in community with others. Friends, we cannot grow in the virtues of the Spirit alone. We cannot be transformed fully into the likeness of Jesus without moving towards people, because that's at the very essence of who God is. He moves towards people who are so different to him, but whom he so highly values. So rather than life as a tiger, I think we're encouraged to the life of a lion. What's the plural of lions? Pride. We know that because they're together. And what are they? They're the king of the jungle. Together they're able to resist danger that comes their way. Together they're going to execute plans. I was thinking about that as the Lord's Supper photo, but I'm not going to do it. But you see, together is about being united. But it's not that although we have this thing in common, that we don't hold differences. You see, a healthy community balances both what we share and what we bring that is unique and different. You see, we need to have enough in common that we actually connect. And so what we've heard from Paul is that we share this identity in Christ, this focus and this priority that he is all, and this great reassurance that he is in all. I think other things that we can do is to share our story of coming to Jesus. That is just so encouraging. That is just so powerful. It gives us connection when we hear each other's stories. We share practices of gathering together, celebrating the Lord's Supper. We've got shared mission, like things tonight. It's just sort of us being together and seeing what God's going to do with it. These shared touch points are the glue that connect us. But we also need enough difference to grow. Different personalities. You know, the planner and the spontaneous, that they need each other sort of to learn that it is to trust people who think differently to them. The introvert and the extrovert, they need each other to learn what it is to make room for people who function differently. Different cultures, perhaps those who are sort of quite formal and reserved and those who are quite informal and relaxed. It's an opportunity to honour people who just function different. Different ages. The older can bring perspective, wisdom. The youth can bring possibility and energy. And even our different preferences and gifts. Within church life, there are some who love going deep in conversation, whereas others sort of want to make sure that it's accessible for people on the fringe or someone who's new. In our interactions around the Bible, some want more discussion but want it to be contained with a clear conclusion, whereas others just love throwing out questions and allowing some sort of ambiguity to just sort of remain. The differences are our opportunity to be stretched. If there's too much sameness, our community is comfortable. We love it. But there's probably very little formation. If there's too much difference, then we're probably just going to have lots of conflict because we can't have anything to really unite around. Again, it's sort of this picture from Colossians of a whole variety of backgrounds, but the unity, common and different. And so again, we're thinking that the things that we do something to us, and also that grace is not opposed to effort. And so just to sort of say that sometimes remembering what we have in common, as all we can see are the differences, that's effort. Trying to navigate ways to stay connected as a community following Jesus, it's not easy. It's resisting the sense of just being overwhelmed. It's pushing through those seasons where you feel a little bit disillusioned, a little bit disconnected. The gospel gives us unity, Jesus as the center gravitational force. So if we just sort of land this on something that might be helpful to think around, it's this idea of affirmation. Now, I told you last week I was at this training for these spiritual renewal groups that I'm a part of. They're basically where people in ministry have like a 3-year cycle that involves like a 1-week retreat where you share your story. And at the end of each of those weeks, there's this thing called you have to write an affirmation for the other people. And I've heard it best described that as you sort of tell your story, it's sort of like you're just unzipping. It's like open heart surgery. You're just sort of like showing this group of people everything about you. You're telling them the whole story. And the affirmation is sort of like the stitching back up. Now, we're Australians, most of us who live here and have been here for a while, even if culturally you're not. And we're not great at affirmation. I feel like it's a bit over the top. It's a bit too American. You know, sort of, if I tease you, it's me showing that I really appreciate you. But I think actually affirmation is something that's going to be really key for us to remember that even despite our differences, we have a greater common core. Paul sort of does it a lot through his letters where he notices, you know, in Romans, your faith has been proclaimed. To Corinthians, I always thank God for you. We saw in Philippians this year, I thank God every time I remember you. We saw in Thessalonians this year, your love for one another is increasing. See, affirmation is a very specific word. Now, it's not, oh, you're so great. You're so awesome. It's not, it's identifying something of the new work that's in you. Hey, your love is really growing. I'm seeing your patience at a different level than what I've seen it before. The generosity that you're just sort of giving with your time or with your possessions, it just seems like it's filled with a joy and an openness. The way that you're persevering through this season is just such a testimony. You see, affirmation is Godward focused. But it is placed in the individual. So it's not just stating theological truths that are sort of true, but they're true for all of God's people. It's actually naming specifics because in a community we know each other. And so it's not flattery, but it's genuine encouragement. It's to remind one another of who they are. Them in Christ. And it also builds us connection that we know you. And so when there are words that are not affirming, that perhaps are correcting, like we talked about the other week in 2 Thessalonians, then it's a balance. You know, I've heard the statement recently that our brains hear positive reinforcement like Teflon, like it just, I know Teflon's not very cool anymore, but you know, it slips off. But a negative comment about us is like Velcro, it just sticks. You've been in those performance reviews. You do this great, you do this great. You're like, oh yeah, whatever. Just tell me the thing that I suck at, and I'm just going to just ponder that forever. See, affirmation is really key for us to have perspective on what God is doing, because his work in us is of keen priority for him. He wants to make his people into the likeness of his son. And so I did hear in some of the Practicing the Way stuff with John Mark Comer this idea of a home group having a circle of affirmation, which I guess is sort of similar to what my retreat groups do, that perhaps when someone's just going through a hard season, just the group just getting around and saying, hey, we're just going to do a circle of affirmation tonight, where it's just a reinforcement of the growth, the good things, the evidence that Christ is in that person to really encourage and to move forward. And so it can help us to realign who we are, and it can also spur us on to embody the virtues that we are to clothe ourselves. It can remind us that we need to put off that old self. And hopefully it can give us an appreciation that living in community is just what we were made for. Friends, to live as a pride of lions. Is what God has intended for us. We need to resist that urge of the tiger, of anti-community. And so as we come to the end of this message about being formed in community, we're going to have the Lord's Supper, because it's just the most significant reminder that Christian community isn't something that we're building. We haven't got some magic dust that makes us the greatest church out. The people of God is established through the blood of the Lord Jesus. And it's a helpful corrective that church isn't about our preferences. It's not really about who's got the biggest, strongest personality. But it's about our commitment. That Jesus is worthy of being center. And actually, a community with Jesus at the center is the best community to be a part of. And so this meal is God's way of saying, this is who you are, my children. This is how you belong through the work of my Son. Formation starts and ends through the perfect work of Jesus. And so as we do the Lord's Supper today, we're just going to do something a little bit different.